Imagine taking down a $70 billion financial network for basically the cost of a weekend getaway.
Right. Or if you want to flip that around, imagine saving a completely priceless space observatory from burning up in the atmosphere using a server you could just, buy at a local electronics store.
Exactly. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are jumping straight into a stack of fresh reports from the July 5, 2026 edition of the Techin Morning News Digest.
And we've got some fascinating sources today to help you extract the actual signals from all the noise.
Yeah, and there is this brilliant, honestly kind of terrifying thread connecting all the biggest stories today. We are looking at the massive asymmetry of impact.
The asymmetry of impact, that is a great way to phrase it.
It's this phenomenon where incredibly small, cheap inputs, like a shoestring budget or a single overlooked line of code.
Or just one guy reading raw data on his laptop.
Right. These tiny things are completely dictating the survival of billion-dollar systems and decades-old legacies.
Because it fundamentally breaks how we traditionally calculate risk and innovation. Well, we are just hardwired to think that massive outcomes require massive resources. But if you look at the raw data from today's sources, I mean, that correlation is completely breaking down.
It really is. The scale of the input simply no longer matches the scale of the output.
Not at all.
Which I think brings us to orbital mechanics. Because right now, there is a literal ticking clock counting down in the upper atmosphere.
Yes, the Catalyst mission.
Right. So on July 3, just a couple days ago, NASA and a private company called Catalyst Space Technologies launched a spacecraft called LNE from the Marshall Islands.
And it's important to note they aren't exploring anything new here.
No, not at all. They're literally trying to catch a falling 22-year-old telescope.
The Swift Observatory. And to really understand the urgency here, you have to look at the physics of our current solar cycle.
Okay, lay it on me.
So we are currently at solar maximum. The sun is just bombarding the Earth with solar storms, which physically heats up the Earth's thermosphere.
Wait, so the sun is just like puffing up our atmosphere?
Exactly. When that upper layer of the atmosphere heats up, it expands outward, essentially puffing up into space.
Wow, okay.
And that expansion dramatically increases the aerodynamic drag on low orbit satellites. Now, Swift has been up there observing stellar deaths, gamma ray bursts, for over two decades.
Over 1,700 bursts, right? According to the report.
Yep, over 1,700. It's a legendary piece of hardware. But right now, the atmosphere is essentially grabbing it and dragging it down.
So it's falling.
Fast. If this rescue mission fails, Swift burns up by the end of 2026.
So the plan is for this new spacecraft, LENK, to intercept Swift at an altitude of 224 miles, basically grab it and drag it higher to a safer 375 miles.
That's the trajectory, yes.
But let's visualize the physical reality of this for a second, because it's wild. Swift weighs nearly 1,450 kilograms.
Right, it's massive.
And it's this old, fragile piece of hardware with aging solar panels. Meanwhile, LENK is tiny. It's only 2 meters tall.
Yeah, it's like a third of the size of the telescope it's trying to tow.
Exactly. And it has to use these three titanium robotic arms to latch onto it.
Arms which, by the way, handle 500 kilograms each in a total vacuum.
Which is just crazy. Then it has to fire its ion propulsion engines to push this massive load higher.
All while moving at orbital speeds.
Right, thousands of miles an hour. One miscalculation or just one jerky movement, and they shatter a priceless astronomical tool into a million pieces.
The margins for error are basically zero.
So I have to ask, why are we doing this? Space is notoriously unforgiving.
Very true.
Why risk a highly sensitive, experimental orbital towing maneuver instead of just, cutting our losses and building a modern replacement telescope?
What's fascinating here is the sheer economics of the alternative.
Okay, the economics.
Yeah, if you want to replace Swift, the baseline cost is at least $500 million.
Half a billion, just to start.
Exactly. And that's before you even factor in the 5 to 10 years it takes to design, build, test, and actually launch a new observatory.
So it's a massive time and money sink.
But here's the thing. The real story isn't just about saving $500 million. It's how Catalyst Space Technologies actually got to the launch pad in the first place.
Right. This is where the asymmetry comes in.
Yes. The reports highlight that Catalyst tested Lindy's highly complex orbital rendezvous systems using a server that cost only $3,000.
Wait, really? $3,000 for a multi-phase orbital rendezvous.
That's what the Digest says.
That barely buys you a high-end gaming laptop these days.
Precisely. I mean, historically, simulating the physics of orbital capture, accounting for microgravity, the thermal expansion we talked about, ions rust vectors.
All that crazy math.
Right. All of that required millions of dollars in proprietary supercomputing time.
And they did it on a budget server.
Catalyst proved you can run those models on commercial off-the-shelf hardware.
That is just mind-blowing.
And if Linen K successfully physically docks by mid-July and finishes the altitude raise by late July, it validates a brand new economic model.
It proves that satellite rescue and repair can be executed on a totally shoestring budget.
Exactly. We are looking at the birth of a commercial orbital towing industry.
So we have cheap hardware saving expensive hardware for literally pennies on the dollar.
It's a huge win.
But, you know, this asymmetry works both ways.
Uncomfortably so, yes.
Because if a $3,000 server can validate the math to save a space telescope, well, another $3,000 server can be used to completely dismantle a global financial ecosystem.
You're talking about the Aptos situation.
Yeah, the Digest details a massive near miss for the Aptos blockchain back in February.
The Hexen's vulnerability report. I mean, this is perhaps the purest example of asymmetrical risk we've seen all year.
Set the stage for us. What is Aptos?
So Aptos is a $70 billion network. That's billion with a B.
Huge.
And security researchers at Hexen's found a way to compromise it using, again, about $3,000 in basic computing power to just probe the network.
The vulnerability was called a stale cache bug.
Right.
So let's break down the mechanics how this actually worked so you listening can picture it. Think of a network's cache like a bouncer at a really exclusive club checking a VIP list.
Okay, I like this analogy.
So the bouncer uses a tablet that constantly updates with who is allowed inside. But in the Aptos system, the tablet wasn't refreshing properly.
Ah, so it was looking at old data.
Exactly, a stale cache. So the hacker didn't need to overpower the bouncer or even forge some complex fake ID.
They just walked right up.
They just walked up. And because the bouncer was looking at yesterday's guest list where the hacker's fake credentials appeared valid, the door just opened.
That is an excellent way to frame it. And by exploiting that failure to refresh, an attacker could inject entirely fake, completely unverified transactions directly into the Aptos ledger.
Just slipping them past the bouncer.
Right. The system wouldn't reject them. And the implications of that are, frankly, catastrophic.
What could they actually do once inside?
Well, you could drain stablecoins right out of the blockchain bridges. Or even worse, you could simply mint brand new counterfeit tokens out of thin air.
Just inflating the whole network to death.
Exactly.
And the most terrifying part of the Hexen's report, I think, is the success rate.
Oh, it wasn't a fluke.
No, we aren't talking about a theoretical bug that works like one in a million times. They tested this exploit in a controlled environment, and it had a 90% success rate.
Out of 20 attempts, 17 or 18 went straight through.
And the cost to pull off this $70 billion heist.
This is the crazy part.
A few hundred dollars in AWS cloud hosting costs.
This raises an important question about how we prioritize security today.
Yeah, because we usually think of a multi-billion dollar heist requiring, I don't know, an Ocean's 11 level of funding and coordination and a crew.
Right, but this could have been executed for the cost of a weekend getaway.
It's terrifying.
If you look at the history of decentralized networks, the ultimate boogeyman has always been the 51% attack.
Explain that briefly.
It's the idea that a malicious state actor would buy up millions and millions of dollars worth of specialized hardware to just physically overpower the network's consensus.
So we built massive, expensive defenses against that brute force scale.
Exactly. But the Aptos incident proves that brute force scale is kind of obsolete. The most existential threats today aren't expensive at all.
They are incredibly cheap logic errors buried deep in the code.
Which is why ethical hackers and bug bounty programs are absolutely essential now.
Right. Fortunately, Hexen's is a white hat firm. They reported it. Aptos patched the code within a matter of hours, and no funds were actually lost.
A huge success story for the bug bounty model.
It is. But a patch is just a Band-Aid at the end of the day. And reading about what Ethereum is doing right now in the Digest, it sounds like they've realized that a Band-Aid isn't going to survive the next decade.
No, they are doing a complete overhaul.
Yeah, so at the Berlin Summit on July 4, Vitalik Buterin announced Lean Ethereum.
Which is a 3 to 4 year roadmap that completely tears out the foundation of the world's largest smart contract network.
They are initiating the third major era of the protocol. And they are doing it because of a threat that most people, frankly, still think belongs in a sci-fi movie.
Quantum computing.
Yeah. The Digest cites systems like Google Willow and IBM Quantum. Now, quantum computers don't just calculate things faster than normal computers. They calculate differently.
Right. They can test multiple possibilities simultaneously.
And the fear is that by 2030 or 2035, these machines will be powerful enough to break elliptic curve cryptography.
Which is literally the exact mathematical lock that secures every single private key on Ethereum.
Everything.
Right. If a machine can look at your public wallet address and easily reverse engineer your private key, the entire concept of cryptographic ownership instantly evaporates.
Poof. The network goes to zero overnight.
It's an existential threat.
I get the severity of the threat, I really do. But let me push back on the timeline here for a second. So what does this all mean for us today? If the experts agree that a viable quantum threat is still, you know, potentially a decade away in 2035, why force thousands of developers to start rewriting all their applications right now?
It's a fair question.
Why the panic in 2026?
It's because of the nature of exponential technological advancement.
Meaning it speeds up.
Exactly. When we look at quantum computing, progress isn't linear. It doesn't move forward in neat, predictable little steps. It compounds.
Right. It feeds on itself.
Yes. A breakthrough in qubit stability leads directly to a breakthrough in error correction, which then essentially halves the timeline for the next milestone.
So it's approaching much faster than a straight line on a graph would suggest.
Much faster. If Ethereum waits until a quantum computer actually breaks a cryptographic key in a testing lab, they have already lost.
It's too late.
The time required to safely rebuild, audit, and deploy a decentralized global infrastructure takes years. You have to start building the bunker long before the storm even forms.
And looking at the Digest, the blueprint for this bunker is massive.
It really is.
Lean Ethereum has three core pillars. First is obviously quantum resistance, which means swapping out the old signatures for new quantum-proof algorithms.
That's the most urgent part.
But the second and third pillars are scalability and privacy, and they rely on some incredibly dense mechanics.
They are targeting 100,000 transactions per second.
Which is insane speed. And they're doing it by making privacy a layer one feature through something called recursive Stark technology.
Starks. Yeah, they are a type of zero knowledge proof.
Okay, can you explain how they solve both scale and privacy at the same time? It sounds like a paradox.
It does. But to understand it, imagine you have a massively complex Sudoku puzzle.
Okay, a Sudoku puzzle. Got it.
Normally, to prove to the network you solved it, you have to show everyone the completed board.
Right, which takes up a lot of data and totally ruins your privacy since everyone sees your numbers.
Exactly. But a zero-knowledge proof allows you to mathematically prove you solved the puzzle without ever showing the board.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And by making these proofs recursive, Ethereum can basically bundle thousands of these proofs inside a single master proof.
So the network only has to verify one mathematical equation to validate 100,000 hidden transactions.
Precisely.
It's brilliant. It really is. But there is a massive catch.
There always is.
To execute this, Ethereum is introducing a completely new, lighter virtual machine. They are transitioning toward an architecture called RISC-V, or Lean-IS.
Yes, RISC-V.
This means they are changing the fundamental alphabet the network uses to read code. Thousands of developers are going to have to rewrite their existing smart contracts to fit this new machine.
It is the equivalent of performing open-heart surgery on a marathon runner while they are actively sprinting.
That's a great image.
They are risking immense short-term disruption to all this legacy code just to guarantee long-term survival against a threat that hasn't even fully materialized yet.
It is a profound engineering challenge. But, you know, here's the irony that the Digest highlights perfectly today.
The X account situation.
Yes. While Ethereum's core developers are writing these mind-bending, quantum-resistant recursive proofs for the year 2035, their own official social media accounts can't even get basic facts right today.
It was quite the blunder.
Yeah. So on July 4th, the official Ethereum X account posted that a subscription service called Proton accepted Ether.
And immediately, this independent on-chain investigator named Zach XBT had to step in and publicly correct them.
Yeah, Zach XBT just pulled the raw documentation and proved that Proton only accepts Bitcoin for subscriptions.
No Ether, no ERC-20 tokens, just Bitcoin.
It is slightly embarrassing for the official Ethereum account, sure. But functionally, I think it points to a massive problem for you and me as consumers of information.
The sheer volume of data.
Exactly. If the official sources are making basic human errors regarding their own ecosystem, it proves that the ocean of digital information being generated today has vastly exceeded human capacity.
We just can't manually verify it all anymore.
Right. Zach XBT doing this by hand with his unbiased track record is super impressive, but it's not scalable for everything.
Which is exactly why we are seeing companies like Google drastically rethink how they allocate artificial intelligence resources to handle this.
The Gemini limits.
Yes. The Digest outlines Google's new tier system for Gemini. They are drawing very strict lines around what they call context windows.
And for those who don't know, a context window is basically how much raw data the AI can hold in its active memory at one specific time, right?
Exactly. And the numbers really illustrate this capacity issue perfectly.
Let's hear them.
So, if you are on the free tier, you get 32,000 tokens. That's roughly 50 pages of text you can feed the AI.
Okay, 50 pages. Not bad for everyday stuff.
Right. Now, the AI Plus tier bumps you up to 128,000 tokens, or about 200 pages.
A solid book.
But if you pay for the AI Pro tier, you get an astonishing 1 million tokens.
1 million.
That is the equivalent of handing the AI a 1,500-page document.
Okay, let's contextualize what a 1 million token limit actually does for a real-world workflow.
It completely changes the relationship between user and data.
Right, you are no longer just asking a machine to help you write a polite email.
Not at all. With the integration of Notebook LM, a pro user can upload an entire decade's worth of dense regulatory filings, or, say, the complete source code of a new blockchain protocol.
And the AI just comprehends the totality of it instantly.
It learns your specific context.
So if I'm paying for Pro, I'm basically renting a tireless expert assistant who can read, memorize, and cross-reference a 1,500-page technical manual in the time it takes me to literally blink.
That's the power of it.
Zach XBT caught the Proton error because he meticulously read the documents. Gemini Pro represents the sheer processing horsepower required to do that exact kind of deep research and verification at machine scale across the entire internet.
It really shows that in our hyper-complex digital environment, the two most premium assets you can possibly possess are raw processing capability and factual accuracy.
Processing and facts. So we have quantum-resistant blockchains being built, AI models reading encyclopedias in seconds, and private companies running orbital rescues on $3,000 servers.
The digital world is evolving at a breakneck pace.
An almost incomprehensible speed. But if you pull the lens back and look at where the world's most powerful sovereign nations are actually putting their wealth right now, it's wild.
They are doing the exact opposite.
They are digging it straight into the dirt.
The July 2 report from the World Gold Council is incredibly telling here.
Break it down for us.
So, central banks added a net 41 tons of physical gold to their reserves in May alone.
41 tons in 1 month.
Yes. And the breakdown of the buyers is really fascinating. Poland bought 18 tons. China bought 10 tons.
Which makes it their 20th consecutive month of gold accumulation, right?
That's right. And we're also seeing resource-rich Central Asian countries like Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan buying heavily.
The numbers are staggering.
Over the last 4 years, central banks have been buying an average of 1,000 tons of gold annually.
1,000 tons a year.
And 45% of reserve managers say they plan to buy even more in the next 12 months.
If we connect this to the bigger picture...
Well, yes, if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a macroeconomic signal of immense proportion.
How so?
When sovereign states accumulate physical bullion at this rate, it indicates a profound lack of confidence in the digital and fiat systems.
I look at this and I honestly have to wonder about the logistics of it all. Buying physical gold means you have to ship it in armored planes, right? You have to build fortified underground vaults and hire actual armies to guard it.
It is incredibly cumbersome.
So if they want an asset disconnected from the U.S. dollar, why are they totally ignoring Bitcoin? I mean, it's infinitely easier to store and transport a cryptographic key than 1,000 tons of heavy metal.
It mostly comes down to institutional memory and international legal frameworks.
Okay, institutional memory.
Think about it. Bitcoin is about 15 years old. To a central banker who is managing the multi-generational wealth of an entire nation, 15 years is just a rounding error.
It's barely a blip.
Exactly. Furthermore, Bitcoin still experiences massive volatility swings compared to gold, and there is no unified international legal framework for sovereign debt settlement in Bitcoin yet.
But gold has, what, 5,000 years of history?
Gold has thousands of years of historical precedent. When central banks look at rising geopolitical tensions, inflation, and the weaponization of the dollar-based financial system, they are seeking the ultimate conservative asset.
They want an asset with absolutely zero counterparty risk.
Precisely.
So it's like everyone on the internet is playing this massive high-speed game of musical chairs with digital assets and AI tokens.
And central banks are just quietly bolting their chairs to the floor with solid gold.
That's exactly it. They don't want an asset that can be frozen by a foreign server or exposed to some cheap, stale cash bug or threatened by a quantum supercomputer in 2035. They just want a rock.
They want a rock. We are watching the emergence of a multipolar world. These countries are building physical fortresses to insulate themselves from the extreme fragility and asymmetry of the digital systems we've been discussing today.
It creates such a stunning contrast, doesn't it?
It really does.
The absolute cutting edge of technology is racing toward massive complexity, you know, rewriting virtual machines and pushing million token context windows, while the bedrock of global finance is actively retreating to a physical element forged in supernovas.
It's a fascinating time to be observing this. And for you listening, this asymmetry is going to play out in real time over the next few days.
Oh, yeah, this week is packed.
Very packed. On July 9, NASA will release the progress report on Catalyst's LIKING mission. We will finally find out if that cheap server successfully guided a physical docking in orbit.
Fingers crossed on that one.
Definitely. Then on July 10th, Vitalik Buterin is hosting an AMA where developers will absolutely be pressing him on the brutal realities of rewriting all that code for lean Ethereum.
That's going to be a tense AMA.
Then on July 12th, Google Cloud Next 2026 kicks off, where the industry fully expects them to unveil Gemini Ultra 2.0.
Which will likely push those token limits even further into the millions.
Exactly. The cascade of news isn't slowing down.
Well, there are just so many massive systemic shifts happening simultaneously right now. We've covered a lot of ground today.
We really have, from space rescues to quantum computing to gold vaults.
Yeah, and considering everything we pulled from the digest today, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder on your own.
Let's hear it.
We live in a world where a cheap $3,000 testing server can rescue a legendary space telescope, and where a lone researcher with a few hundred dollars can uncover a bug that could crash a $70 billion global network.
The asymmetry of impact.
Exactly. So looking ahead to the rest of the decade, you have to wonder, are the biggest threats and the most profound solutions of our future really going to come from massive billion-dollar institutions?
More.
Or are they going to come from a lone, curious person working quietly on a cheap laptop in a coffee shop?